Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish.
Dr. Carl, he's an Australian, a science communicator, and a popularizer. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Dr. Howard. Pretty great, mate. How's that for sounding Australian?
You sound very Australian today. You're having a particularly Australian day.
Well, I've been for a swim in the pool and got tumbled a few times in the ocean pool. Unfortunately, my wife got too close to the edge and got actually rolled slightly out of the pool and got a few bruises. Oh, the poor darling.
Oh, wow. Listen, the truth is, though, it's winter and you're able to go for a swim in the sea. That's not a bad thing.
It's not too hard. The coldest water I've been in is when I jumped into the ocean in the Antarctic in the Ross Sea. Mm-hmm. And that was at a temperature of minus 1.8 degrees C. And the reason that the water didn't freeze was because it wasn't fresh water, but rather it was salt water. And I had the most bizarre body reaction. So I had a rope around my tummy, just wearing my little swimming cozzies. What do you call them in South Africa? Swimming cozzies?
Yeah, we do as well. Very similar, swimming costume or a cozzie, yeah.
Yep. Okay, so I jumped in with a rope around my tummy so they could pull me back. And I just floated in the water, underwater, and I could hear the whales. And then as I came, they started pulling me back. And then suddenly I had this most horrible ice cream headache, the worst headache I'd had in my whole life. I thought, oh, my God, I'm having a stroke. And then as I got close to the boat, they pulled me towards the boat, I reached for the ladder, and I was able to use my left and right hands and arms and legs evenly. So I thought, okay, it's just a stupid ice cream headache. I haven't had a stroke. Then when I got on a deck and walked around, it felt as though I was walking on razor blades, even though the deck was perfectly smooth, and about one third of the people reported having that. And then my daughter and I both had showers, and then we put on pajamas and got snugged up and went into bed. And then about half an hour after that, or maybe an hour after we jumped into the water, we each went through about 20 minutes of this reflex shivering, just going, shake, 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 even though we were warm and snug up in bed. And a few other people did that as well, so I don't understand what was going on.
That's incredible. And the razor blade thing? What would that
be? No idea. There's some sort of resetting of pain on the bottom of your foot. I know that when you're walking in bare feet in cold weather, little stones feel more uncomfortable on your feet than when you're walking in warm weather, but I do not know why. So I'm sorry, Howard, this is yet another one of the many things I don't know.
Incredible. Well, here's one maybe you do, maybe you don't. I don't, but in our family, a few of our kids suffer from, I don't know, chilblains. They struggle in winter, and a few of them say when they step into a shower, it's the water's warm, it's incredibly painful. Do we understand why?
Somebody probably would, and I've got to chase it up. I've been noticing that happening a little bit. And as we head more into the colder days of winter, probably around August, I'll start to feel a lot more cold. So that'll be a reminder for me to chase it up. Why do you feel cold? I'm writing this down for my homework. Thank you for increasing my workload, Dr. Howard.
The things I do for you. So here's a listener question for you as well. One of our listeners wanted to know, let me just go to it. They wanted to know if everybody on an aeroplane jumps up and down at the same time, obviously I'm assuming a larger aeroplane, would it impact the aeroplane?
Well, yes, because for them to jump up, they all have to jump, they all have to apply downward force. And so if there's, say, 300 people, their total weight is probably around 70 kilograms, 700. So they'd weigh 20 tons. So if everybody jumped at the same time, they'd provide a downward force on the airplane of 20 tons, which the pilot would definitely notice. And then they would go into the air, and then the plane would suddenly be lighter by back to zero, then another 20 tons down, and then get back to normal again by when they landed. So the pilot would definitely notice if they did this anti-social behavior. Also, if they all piled up to the left side of the plane or the right side or the front or the back, the pilot would notice and would have to reset various trim tabs, ailerons, etc.
Very, very interesting. And let's just talk about plastic rain falling out of the sky.
Yes, it's bizarre stuff. It turns out that across the USA, the amount of microparticles, the weight of microparticles, is around 16,000 tons each year, which is equivalent to around 2 billion plastic water bottles. And then if you go into the deep oceans, and look at the mud, and you look at just the top 5 millimeters of the mud, in each square meter, you'd find about 2 million microparticles of plastic, and they come about, say, 70% from clothing and about 30% from other causes. So when you put your synthetic clothes into the washing machine, then the microfibers come out, and if they're less than 5 millimeters, they're called a microparticle, microplastic particle, and then they just keep on breaking down. You see, the thing that we love about plastics is that they're so hardy and resistant to breakdown, so they don't normally chemically react with anything in their environment, but they can be physically broken down into smaller particles, so their hardiness is what makes them such a danger. It also seems that some of the smaller ones actually have endocrine or hormonal effects on the sort of crab, is it the humpback crab? No, that's a humpback whale. The hermit crab that walks around, if it's exposed to micro particles of plastic, it finds it hard to find a shell. So we're ending up doing bad things to ourselves, and what we're now finding is that some of these micro particles of plastic are actually turning up in fish. So we've taken them out of the ground as oil, processed them into plastic, single-use plastic, thrown it away, gone into the ocean, and then it's gone into the little fish, then the bigger fish, and it's coming back into our bodies. Another thing we discovered also is that the oceans are not just a sink where plastic ends up, but also a source. So each time you get big waves, the ocean will burp out about 10 microplastic particles in each cubic meter of air. Wow. The bad news is that this is happening. The good news is that now that we know that it's happening, we can do something to stop it from happening in the future.
Incredible. I mean, that is really, really incredible. And I guess that's what makes it so important, just to be aware of plastics and plastic disposal in particular.
I love good solid plastics, like, you know, the high density nylon that is an engineering grade material, and you get hundreds of thousands, tens of thousands of uses out of that, or Kevlar sails or rope when you're using four wheel driving. But a bit of plastic that you use once and then throw away, that is horrible. A very bad thing, and we will gradually acquire enough wisdom to stop doing that sort of bad behavior.
I think so. I think you're certainly seeing a lot more sensitivity to it. Let's just talk about memory. How does memory is part of our personal identity, but it's a very mysterious area, isn't it?
Yes, we don't know how it works. We've been trying to work this out since the early 1920s, when it accidentally gave rise to the myth that we use only 10% of our brain. We do know that there are certain areas of the brain that seem to store memory, and the different areas do long-term and short-term. We also know that various chemical type things happen along the way, that, for example, proteins are manufactured in the laying down of long-term memories, and that then leads to changes in the nerves, and we actually found structures on nerves with interesting names like axonal butons and dendritic spines and post-synaptic densities. And we've also discovered that plants, even though they don't have a brain as such, can remember stuff. We've discovered another way that memory is laid down, is we get changes happening in the DNA of different parts of the nerves in the brain. And we've just in the last few weeks discovered that another chemical is involved in laying down memories. And this is there's a whole bunch of these saturated fatty acids. A fatty acid is a chemical that's got about a carbon and two oxygens at one end. And then it's got a whole bunch of carbon atoms, somewhere between 4 and 28. And one of them is called myristic acid, and that seems to be involved in laying down memories. And it's a fatty acid, and when you think about it, it kind of makes sense, because the brain itself has more fat than any other organ in the body, and the fat, besides providing energy and structural integrity to the brain, it's also involved in passing messages from one brain cell to a next. The fatty acids help make little hollow balls of fat that we call synaptic vesicles. And then these mingle in and out of cell membranes and pass messages from one brain cell to the other. And we also know that when brain cells in a dish, you know, just a laboratory dish, start talking with each other, the levels of fatty acids increase. And hopefully at this stage, this pure research will lead us to a greater understanding so that then we can do something for people, for example, with Alzheimer's disease, who have difficulty in laying down new memories. Old memories, they're fine. Laying down new memories, that's really hard. So it'll be probably a half decade or more before we start finding some applications of this research, but you've got to do the pure research before you can get the applications.
Absolutely fascinating. That's where we do have to leave it. Dr. Carl, thank you as always. What a fascinating and insightful segment this is.